So, in Holy Week, we're going to deal with the question, what does it mean to be king? And I think how we answer that question has a lot to do with what we think it means to be king. And this might be tough for us to think about, because our daily interactions with kings is kept to a minimum. We don't live under the rule of a king. We don't have interactions with kings in our daily lives. We in Canada are a constitutional monarchy. And so what that means is that the king, or in our case, Queen of England, is the head of our country, but the governance and lawmaking and so on are left up to our elected members of parliament. And it's funny for me to, when I walk into a school, to see this portrait of Queen Elizabeth II, and it's actually cut off just a slight bit on the PowerPoint. It says Queen of Canada right underneath that line. It probably would have been hard to read anyway. Always kind of makes me pause for a second and look at it when I drop Noah off at preschool, because she basically has no power or authority in the actual governance of Canada. We still honor her in many, many ways with lots of pageantry or other members of the royal family when they come to visit Canada. And this keeps our connection to the British Empire and the roots of the founding of Canada, though she has little influence in our lives. I know my grandmothers, both of them, really liked to follow the monarchs and were always glued to the television when there was a special event going on. But beyond that, there was a very little role in the Queen's life, in our life. Today, probably our understanding of kings has more to do with books and movies than anything else. That shapes our understanding of what it means to be king and our expectations of what a kingly role would look like. And for me, I think of Aragorn in Lord of the Rings. He's a powerful warrior who's able to rally the men together to rescue Middle-earth. And although he's reluctant to take on the role of king, he eventually achieves his destiny. What's been set out for him as he returns as King of Gondor eventually. And I remember it was a little bit of a tradition during those Christmas seasons when Lord of the Rings were out every Christmas season that my dad and my two brothers and I would go and watch the film. And I remember in The Return of the King when Aragorn is rallying the men at the Black Gate and that powerful speech to encourage them as they are about to march on this important task. He gets them ready for battle. And I remember watching this in the theater and getting so riled up that I was ready to grab my sword and charge in with him out of my seat in the movie theater. I wanted to find a couple examples of kings who had power but used them corruptly, and it was a little bit hard to find fictional characters in books and movies that really filled this role quite well. It was more corrupt figures who were trying to manipulate their way into the position of king. And the one that stands out to me is Cardinal Richelieu in The Three Musketeers, and Christoph Waltz is the picture here, even though Tim Curry was more the guy who influenced me in The Three Musketeers movie, but I didn't find a good, clear image of him. But he was trying to manipulate his way to basically rule France and become king in that way. Or Prince John in younger days in Robin Hood. So these characters, they long to be recognized as king, or willing to do anything to get into that role, regardless of how they oppressed the people that they wanted to govern. These images and concepts shape how we think of what it means to be king, what it means to be a royal figure. And it influences our ideas as we come to consider Jesus as king. Of course, we're also influenced by biblical kings like David and Josiah and how they governed and they ruled in the biblical stories. These images that I discussed just a moment ago actually fit well into the background in the time of Jesus. And these concepts relate well to what the people would have been in the back of their minds as they hailed Jesus as king as he walked rode into Jerusalem as the people walked with him, celebrating him. Herod Antipas was the ruler in Jerusalem at that time. He was ruling Judea. His father, King Herod, had been appointed by the Romans. And after Herod's death, the territory is divided for a number of reasons among his three sons. So Herod was the one ruling Jerusalem at that time. And he wasn't given the royal title, the title as king. He was allowed to take on the family name of Herod, which was kind of a royal title, but he was known as a tetrarch. He did what kings were expected to do. He governed, he protected the people, established cities, built. This is what kings were supposed to do. And he's most remembered to us as the killer of John the Baptist, as he flippantly beheaded him in the midst of a lavish party and a fancy celebration. This surely was not the ruler the people were hoping for, not the ruler they expected and longed for to govern their people. He didn't have any actual true authority. It was all given to him from Rome. This was not what it meant to be God's king. Rome was a superpower of the world and governed a vast territory. Judah was one of these territories, and it was governed in a similar way to how the queen governs Canada, except for the difference that Rome did have absolute power to rule and to govern. But what they did is they had, similar to our governor general, they had a representative in that area to govern and to make sure that Rome's interests were being protected and the people were governed wisely. And this role was taken on by Pontius Pilate, and we will see his important figure as we journey through Holy Week. Often also a statue of Caesar was placed in these different cities to remember who the true ruler was, that it was Caesar at the time of Jesus, Tiberius. So not unlike the picture of the governor general of Pontius Pilate was ruling somewhat at the time of Jesus, albeit with actual power as opposed to what our queen or how our governor general runs Canada. So, but neither of these situations were actually acceptable. The people longed for a valiant warrior, a warrior to free them from the Romans and establish a true kingdom. A warrior, perhaps not unlike Aragon, to rally the people together, to push Rome away, to fight those battles, to cleanse the temple, to move the nations that oppressed them away from their land and restore the fortunes of Israel, like in the time of David, like the time of Solomon. This is what the people longed for as Jesus rode into Jerusalem. And we see this most pronounced in the Jewish poetry dealing with the time where Rome defeated Jerusalem, some 60 years before Jesus was born, and the destruction that took place. And these texts celebrate a warrior girded with strength, purifying the people, purifying the temple, driving out the nations, dealing with sinners, leading a righteous people. As Jesus approaches and enters Jerusalem, these images, ideas, thoughts, and expectations would be at least in the background of the people's minds as they hail Jesus as king and as they scream out, "Hosanna, please save us."